find any fun in wasting all my time on one. So every day with me.
Hey, good morning. Don't get too angry. That was a song that actually was the title of a radio show and later a television show for women, a matinee show called Ladies' Day. It was a kind of a, I don't know, just fill time show for women working in their homes. And it was, the MC was a guy named Bud Collins. I chose it because it is the archetypal reactionary view of women. And I think that it is kind of an interesting thing to explore. This song, transgressive as it is in every sense, and kind of insulting in just about every sense, characterizes what I think much of the treatment of women by media and by society well into our own time is typical. I mean, it's just typification, okay? I would like to hear from women today, only women, on the air on KBOO. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe ain't here. It's just Joe. 231-8187. Largely call generated today. I am very concerned with what I see as a society and, in fact, a world on the brink of disasters at every level, from population explosion to climate change to nuclear disaster to wars, old-fashioned wars, to a misunderstanding in American consciousness about what exactly happened when the Soviet Union broke up and the creation of the various formerly client states of what was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. But none of that is the limit to our discussion. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from women particularly, not from men. We spend a lot of time on talk radio talking with men. It tends to be a medium that favors men because I'm not sure why, but I think it has to do with a certain level of aggression which is normative in our society. And I really, really, really think that that is unfortunate. So today, all callers, I want to make this clear, all callers who are going to get on the air must be women. And your comments are welcome. The theme is open. I will begin with a couple of comments, and then I'm going to try to shut up and take you one at a time. I may respond to your calls, maybe not. But won't you take this opportunity to call us and tell us what your thoughts are, the theme, the progress or lack thereof of women in the United States and the world, and consider all aspects of that. I would love to hear from you. I really, really think this is a good idea. I really think this is an opportunity. We probably should afford this more often, but here we are, and here is the opportunity. I'll start with just one simple observation. The current crisis in the Ukraine is so misreported by the press uniformly that it makes me not just sad, but outraged. When the Soviet Union broke up, an agreement was made by the first Bush. An understanding was made by various presidents and by the European Union that there would not be an armament of the former Soviet republics against Russia. That was not fulfilled. There are missile bases under thin disguise that are supposed to be aimed at Persia, that is, at Iran. And there are various other bases, essentially an effort to militarize for the West all of the former Soviet republics. If you see the Ukrainian situation in that context, you can understand better what's going on and realize that, in fact, Putin is not crazy. He may be outrageous. He may be a dictator. He may be a lot of things, but this is not madness. This concern is an authentic, real politic concern. I just throw that out there, not because it has to be this topic to discuss, but because I'm sort of outraged at the way in which the media has covered this potential disaster of return to the Cold War. Now, without any further ado, I want to open the lines up for women. Your calls, varying topics, are more than welcome. Try to keep your comments brief so that as many of you can get in as possible. So let's go to our first caller, 231-8187. Claire, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. I'm so glad that you're treating this topic, and I agree. I'll be so brief. I have 3 points. I agree with you. Globally, we really need to stand up. I've recently read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine.
Good book.
The new Jim Crow, colorblindness in the, you know, incarceration in the age of colorblindness. And we're kind of losing, I think, progressive values over the last 50, 100 years. We need to stand up and get active and all those great things. About women specifically, I love women and I love men. I'm a body worker, meaning a massage therapist who doesn't do what most people think of as massage. I do a lot of chronic pain relief. I love people. I love them with my hands every day. I love them. However, when we focus on the victimization of women globally or locally, I think a lot of men are getting ignored, because guess who abuses little boys who grow up to be men who abuse women? It's the moms a lot of the time.
Really?
So I think, oh yeah. So I think, or it's female babysitters or what, you know. So I think we need to stop looking at the cycle of violence as men perpetrating on women and look at it as humans perpetrating on humans. And let's just stop being sexist about it.
No, that's one point. That's really interesting. What was your other point?
Thank you. And the other one is, women need to hold ourselves accountable for things like, if you make a big deal about the toilet seat and then you expect to be able to vote or drive a car, I don't get it. Come on, can we not operate a toilet
I'm not sure
seat?
I get it either. What's your, what?
My point is, if you can't operate a toilet seat, why do you expect respect in the world? Let's get over the toilet seat.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for the comment. I'm going to get some other
folks. Okay, thanks for holding the show.
Yeah, you bet. All right, more women callers, all women callers. This is Ladies' Day for us. Who's next?
Oh, yeah.
Pardon, Miriam, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. The first caller said something that I would have said also. I strongly second that. And I would really
which one? The toilet seats or the abuse thing?
Both.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, really. Yeah, actually, I have a son. I was a single mom, and I have one son. This is not my main point. I'm just making this brief comment.
Yeah.
And I figured, I thought about the toilet seat thing, and I think, you know, I'm just going to leave it up all the time, and when I need it down, I'll put it down. And when I get done, I'll put it up again. It's like respect for him, you know?
Yeah, but maybe there's some symbolic meaning in all of this.
Anyway, that's not my main point. Two things that I want to say. Don't idealize women. I mean, women, really, I think women are just as violent as men. We just do it differently.
Huh.
It's more emotional violence than physical violence. But I'll tell you, you know, I used to be in support groups for incest survivors, sexual abuse survivors.
Uh-huh.
And the men who were sexually abused by their mothers, I mean, it's appalling. Really. It may not be as many in numbers as women. I don't know about that. I'm not so sure. But
yeah, I don't think there's a way to know that, actually.
Yeah, there isn't a way to know that. But the abuse is just as devastating, and it is sometimes very emotionally manipulative, you know, emotionally abusive at a level that sometimes I'm not sure that men can do to girls as much as women can do to boys. Because a boy will often get sexually aroused very obviously, and then he'll blame himself. You know, so anyway, there's that. What's the other point?
I don't know.
So sometimes it bothers me that you and Abe have these shows where you take up women's issues. And I really feel, you know, I'm really annoyed about men who want to tell me how abused, how oppressed I am as a woman. You know, I'm sorry.
No. I think one of the biggest problems that I face is to try to deal with issues fairly, and at the same time not be not objectify the other, and try to come to some reasonable understanding of what's going on. I'm just, you know, all I got going for me is reading and experience, and that's not enough to justify making any set of assumptions about the relationships between men and women multiculturally.
Yeah, but it's just as hard from the other side. I would really like, you know, and I understand why men can't do this, but I would really like to hear men's view of their problems in life. You know, the truth is life is tough for everybody. It's just tough in different ways. And I really get sick of the bitching and moaning of women and know how oppressed we are and all this stuff. I mean,
but you do acknowledge that power, money, and weaponry and all the other elements of power are more in the hands of men than women.
That's true, but women have their own power, you know. It's more subtle, it's more, you know. I mean, I know this is terribly stereotypical, but there's an element of truth in every stereotype that women really do have more emotional power over men than men do over women. I mean, we're just better at manipulating. I mean, men can manipulate too, but women are better at it. You know?
You don't think you're stereotyping now in a certain kind of way?
Well, to some extent I am, but, you know, as I said, there's a certain element of truth in every stereotype.
Okay. Let's give some others an opportunity.
Right.
You've raised quite a topic. I'll bet I'll get lots of calls.
I hope so.
All right. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
I'm going to remind people this is, of course, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, and this is KBOO. And we're today asking only for women callers. Probably we should do this more often, but I'm doing it today, so I want to hear from you. The topic is really open. I'm concerned, increasingly concerned, with the what I see as the devolution of humankind in the direction of violence and destruction of civilization, I think is going on incredibly rapidly and incredibly foolishly. And we see this so many different ways. And one of the questions that has come up often, particularly with the rise of feminism, is this about male, you know, is this a male thing? Or is it a human thing? Or what do we do about all this? And I do want to hear from you. 231-8187. Leah, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. This is wonderful. When I first heard your first program of Women Only, I just broke into tears because we had talked about this.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And I did not expect it. It was so wonderful just to hear women's voices. Two things. I went to see a mandala. And one of the things that struck me in there about the South African, the apartheid, was the how the women were such a part of that. And the scene in there that just hangs in my mind is they had these huge, there's about maybe 8, 10, 12 African women. And they have these huge African drums and the beaters, and they're dressed in their traditional robes, and they're just beating the crap out of those drums and singing and a mandala means power, and I think that's the kind of energy that as women we need to pick up and bring. We need to get together and start doing that, and they started doing that and singing for 20 years. They did this as part of what brought the apartheid government down.
Mm-hmm. So it's certainly true.
Or I'd love to participate in that. The second thing is, what I'm hearing from a lot of these women is a lack of awareness of the cultural ramifications of what goes on with women and men, our gender stuff. And Bell Hooks is one of the people that I have been reading, and she talks about those through the cultural process, because this is culture, and it was a transition time back in 1,000 years ago or whenever it happened. Doesn't matter. We have to deal with it now. And if we don't deal with it, we're already on the verge of annihilation. I mean, it's just incredible. So every day we have is a gift. And I don't want to waste my time bitching and moaning. What I want to do is I want to do something powerful. And I got myself an African drum for my birthday this year, and I'm going to learn to play it. But I'd love to have other women. I think we need to get out on the streets just with our drums and just a mandala, power, because it is about power and control. So, but using it in a way that is not abusive and doesn't mistreat people. You know, in other words, taking power and control of myself, not other people.
Well, thank you for the call. And I have to say, I've read Bell Hooks, and I find her work very enlightening, very useful.
Yeah.
And thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right. Remember, bye-bye. This is a women's show, 231-8187, though the host is a guy. I would love to hear from you. Who's next? Lori, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I almost didn't listen to the program today because I thought it was very predictable. But having heard the first two callers, I will sing to myself all day.
Great.
this is the first time that I've listened to KBOO where the so-called victim has ever taken a scrap of responsibility for what's going on. And I appreciated that. So thank you.
Okay. Is that it? Thank you for the call. 231-8187. What, Rose, you're on the air.
Hey there. Hi, I wanted to thank you for the show you're doing today. I think it's pretty cool. I wasn't going to call in, but I just had a quick comment about the toilet thing.
The toilet seat issue. Yes.
Okay. All right. I have a really small apartment, and I date a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when fellas come over to my house, I just ask, you know, it's not a big deal. Hey, could you just sit whenever you pee in my
mm-hmm.
bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
Because then, you know, like, if everybody sits, then I don't have to clean up the pee. Everybody should just sit, is what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
Like, and this one guy I was dating had, like, a really toxic reaction to this. He said, well, if I sit, I'm not a man. You're, like, you're emasculating me because you're asking me to
Whoa,
sit.
Whoa, really?
Like, yeah, he was really upset about it. And I said, well, when I go to your house, I'm going to stand up to pee. Is that okay? Because I don't have good aim. But I'm just going to do that at your house next time, okay? And he said, no. And I said, well, you know, I don't care, but there's splashing. There's always splashing. So that's all I had to say. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
You bet. No, that's interesting. I had not expected we would have so much reaction to the old toilet seat issue, though I've even seen it in comics in the Oregonian. So I guess it's a real issue. I will say only one thing about that. In my understanding of physiology, men's ability to empty their bladder does depend on the ability, probably, to either squat or stand rather than sit directly. But I don't know. This is just my understanding. I don't even know why I said that. Forget it. Let me just say this. People ought to be respectful of each other, and people ought to clean up their own mess, period. All right, now let's go on to the next caller, 231-8187. Who? Do we have a pause? This toilet seat is toxic. Okay, here's my thing. I honestly do believe that there are two things going on culturally in the West right now around issues of power. The first is and by the way, I think cultural mythologies play a significant role in our definitions of ourselves. I think there is a set of assumptions that have enormous resonance with men and women about women as, because they are, in fact, the keepers of family, the keepers of the humankind, the notion of women as the more peaceful, the more home-creating, and so on. These are stereotypes. The stereotypes can or cannot be true depending on circumstances and situations. One of the great heroes, in fact, of the struggle against the Romans in Great Britain was a woman chieftain. And there have been, and it's the same is true for France and several other Western countries. The assumptions, therefore, are culture-based. On the other hand, there really is much to be said for the reality of responsibility. That is to say, humankind is to survive, it will survive in the context almost certainly of families, and families are, by the very nature of reproduction, in the hands of women. This is very important, and that brings in another issue very easily. If you've been paying attention at all, you can see the right-wing advance in trying to stop women's reproductive rights. This is a fight that one would have thought was over 20 years ago, but it's not. It was over 10 years ago. No, it's not. We are still seeing a powerful reactionary force in many, many states and jurisdictions attempting to restrict women's reproductive rights. The peculiar aspects of it are based on a kind of religious fundamentalism. Children shouldn't know about sexuality, shouldn't have any information about reproductive processes and about contraception. On the other hand, should the inevitable occur and women become pregnant, young women in particular, they should bear the burden of that, and they should not be allowed to have abortions. This absurdity has grown more and more powerful in the face, as a kind of reactionary force, in the face of progress being made both technologically in terms of reproductive rights and in terms of the politics of reproduction. I find this frightening, and I find it stupid, and I find it apparently a gripping force in American politics. And I wonder what we can do about that, how we deal with that. I want to hear from you. That's not the only issue, though. I'm not trying to restrict the conversation today, but I just throw that out there. I want to move beyond toilet seats, I guess. All right, 231-8187. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. I'm the person that chatted with you at the pledge drive the other day.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, I'm calling because I guess I am going beyond the toilet seat. You said that men could only empty their bladders.
No, not only. It's just easier for them.
Right. Well, I just wanted you to know that women give birth only lying down because it's convenient for the men doctors. And the way we're set up now, actually, physiologically, standing or squatting is the way to do that.
I understand that.
Our society really asks people to contort themselves from natural biological functions for the ease of other people.
You know, I think that's a good point. I really do. I know that there, when the women's movement really cranked up and got moving in the United States, I think particularly in terms of the 70s and 80s, we began to discover that birthing methods as designed by the West were to make the woman passive and helpless and defenseless with the interference of largely male doctors doing for them, that is, as if the men were giving birth.
Yeah.
So I think your point is valid.
Okay, thank you. Well, take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, 231-8187, wide open topics. We're looking for women callers only today. I should probably do this more often. I think it's a good idea. I'm concerned about larger political issues, but that is not the limit of our conversation. I want to hear from you. Raquel, you're on the air.
Good morning, and I, too, want to hear about larger political issues, but they do start at home. And I feel like one of the most significant actions that any woman can take today is to really do deep self-exploration and come to understand the places of internal compromise. That's such a culturally embedded it's very relative to your heritage and experience,
mm-hmm.
your life experience. But when we really take those steps to look at it, just ask yourself, how do I compromise? There are places at work, at home, in your bed, and with strangers on the street that you have been culturally conditioned to compromise your voice, to compromise your sense of effective purpose. And for me, this has been such a radically empowering process, and I do a lot of work to guide other women through that in my own practice as a healer. And the biggest, it's not even a protest, it's a foretest. It's not a, you know, it's not against, it's not resisting, it's women taking a stand towards, you know, empowerment that will affect every sector and most significantly the areas of policy change and government and civil leadership is around our sexuality. And I mean, I'm pro-sex, I'm pro-body, I have deep respect for however anyone wants to express that. And I challenge women to look at themselves and take responsibility for how out of choice or circumstance they have been compromising their sense of self in those arenas, because that is where, you know, we just affect all other areas of our life when we feel really sexually empowered, and how that communicates or translates to our daughters. How are we raising sexually empowered, self-respecting, self-discerning, clear young women?
No, I think that, yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, just getting over those stigmas and doing what we can to really embrace our voice, because our voice starts and is rooted in our sense of empowerment, and sex is a huge, huge area or vehicle for disempowerment.
Well, I can't speak with great knowledge, obviously, in this topic, but I have a deep belief that a lot of cultural behaviors, and I look at societies that are particularly restrictive toward women, Christian and Jewish and Muslim, because I know them. I think in terms of the way in which women have been restricted in those societies in which sexuality has been controlled largely by a male patriarchy. And I see that there is a great fear of the power of women and a great desire to make the family a patriarchal institution controlled with absolute knowledge of who is the male parent and so on. And I see all of that as having to do with economics and politics and the centrality of the family unit as a traditional unit. So I really see all of that in a political context as well as in a cultural context.
I completely disagree, and it's not to disempower men. These families of potency that can really have positive civil and global effects are going to have deep, whether it's a traditional, you know, family with a man and a woman or any way that it can be expressed, they're going to have respect for men and women, and the value of that comes from the way that we treat each other. And a primal way is around our sexuality and respecting one another's energies. So, empowerment to all, and thank you so much for having the show. I always enjoy calling in and responding, so thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. If you're just tuning in, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe isn't here. This is Joe. I'm trying and hopefully doing a decent job of inviting all women to call and talk about what they want to talk about. I set the table, as it were, with my concern that we're seeing the end of humankind as we know it because of the enormous destructive power of the various technologies we have and of the enormous desire for control in a world based on capitalism. And I want to hear from you, all of you women, 231-8187. Joanne, how you doing?
Instead of females talking about toilet seats and power, I would like to see females do something about sex trafficking in this country and the world. Okay, I'll say bye.
Okay, thank you for the call. Well, the sex trafficking is an amazing issue, which we have not, as far as I can remember, we have not really done any serious examination of it on this show. It's probably a topic we should take on. Maybe not today. 231-8187. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I wanted to make a couple of points today.
Sure.
One is, I think that it would be really interesting to find out what it would be like if we had both genders in control of this country. I think it would really change things. Just by the response of the callers, it just really shows you the different outlook that women have of the world and of themselves and of other people. I don't think that just women have that outlook, but I think that it would offer another perspective if, you know, there was a woman in the White House, not just the wife
Let me ask you this. Do you think things would really be changed if Hillary Clinton, for example, were president?
I think that, yeah, I do. I think that it would offer a different perspective. I think she would have a different outlook on the way when things happen. She would respond differently. I do. I think it would be
okay.
Different.
Okay. I was just curious. My view is more sociological. I think people fill roles, and gender becomes less important in when people have power than you would think because they begin to behave the way the role dictates. But I don't know. We don't have a test, do we?
Exactly. I think you may be correct, but we don't know yet.
So that's true.
Definitely worth checking out.
Well, and I look at Thatcher and Merkel as my models, but again, I really don't know.
Yeah. So the second point I wanted to make is I kind of just wanted to speak to women out there everywhere and their kind of the way they, and I can't say that all women do this, but the idea of feminism and how it's a women's issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just want anyone who thinks that it's a women's issue, it's kind of a silly thing to say, because if it were just a women's issue, it wouldn't be an issue at all. So I will sometimes, I have a friend who I tell him that he's a feminist, and he's a little bit offended by that. But I think that a feminist is really a person who believes in equal rights for all people. And I think that the movement kind of needs a paradigm shift a little bit in thinking that, feeling, you know, that everybody should have a voice. And it is true that maybe women are the latter of the two to get that voice, but that doesn't mean that men cannot be feminists also. If they believe that women also should have power also, just like men, then they're a feminist. You know, that if we all agree that we should be equal, then you're a feminist. So that's my take on feminism.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm going to take some more calls. I also have to read some stuff here. Hang on. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor isn't here. This is Joe Uris. We're asking for women callers only, and we're leaving kind of the topic open. I raised the question of what's happening in the world today, but now I have to read some stuff. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, journalist and writer Chris Hedges, who I really respect, speaks on Captain Ahab and U.S. Empire. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a report from Japan on the third anniversary of the tsunami and nuclear meltdown in Fukushima, Japan. And we'll hear from attorney Danielle Sheehan, who talks about his new autobiography, The People's Advocate. At 11, on Stage and Studio, host D-May Roberts explores The Unexpected Guest, a new theater performance from Well Arts written by people living with multiple sclerosis. And at 11:30, on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Amy Bernstein, who has a show of paintings at Nacional. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you're not a member, hey, why not become one today? Go on the KBOO FM website and click on Donate Today. All this and more on KBOO 90.7 your FM dial. And we're talking to women today on any issue you want to bring up. Let's see who's next. 231-8187. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Joe. Thank you for this program.
Sure.
I have a couple points, but before I get into them, I just want to say, you and Abe have a lot for many, many times focused on women and their reproductive rights. And while this has been an issue in the news off and on in lots of contexts the last couple of years, I just want to say women are more than their reproductive rights. There are millions of us who no longer have to worry about getting pregnant, thankfully. So sometimes I think you almost perseverate on that issue, although I appreciate your bringing attention to it, too. But the two points that I want to make is when you open the show, you kind of ask the question, where are women and have something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing now, where are we and have we progressed at all? And I think that I look back on my own mother, for example, who couldn't vote. I've been doing some genealogy and ancestry research of late and finding women in the 18th and 19th centuries who had very, very large families, and several of them died, and their husbands lost them as well. So I would like to say that we've come an extraordinarily long ways, both men and women, certainly in the course of the 20th century and on into the 21st century, in large part because of medical science, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The other question that you asked is whether the world would be a different place. Again, I'm paraphrasing. I mean, we had Indira Gandhi, we had Margaret Thatcher, we've had other people who've been in power. I don't really know if the world would be a better place if women ran it or not. I don't think we've had a large enough sample, so to speak, in order to be able to say that might or might not be true. But I'd love to see more women in leadership positions politically,
mm-hmm.
to see if, in fact, that would play, if it would play out differently. There's one thing as an American, and not necessarily a woman, that bothers me terribly, that I'm wondering would be different if women were in power, and that is this whole, to me, it's almost a preoccupation with the U.S. being number one in everything. We have to be the first militarily. We have to be the first. You know, frankly, I don't care if we no longer maintain the most superior military on the planet. Mm-hmm. I don't care. But when you listen to politicians, it's as if we lose this edge, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket. Perhaps I'm naive, perhaps I'm not seeing the whole big picture, but that disturbs me terribly in terms of the U.S.'s kind of wanting to be Bigfoot, play the role of Bigfoot on the planet and rescue everybody. I think we should all get together and rescue everybody. I don't think it should be just necessarily a U.S. responsibility. But thank you so much for this opportunity to speak up, and I love that you've got all women. When I first tuned in, I wasn't going to call, and then I thought, well, why not?
Yeah.
Because women, one after another, were calling in, and the toilet seat issue, to me, is just like who cares about that? But
well, I think if people wipe up, it doesn't matter.
That's a great one. Okay, so those are all the thoughts that I had for today.
Okay, thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome.
I was just thinking about women in power, and there have been in more modern times women with as heads of state. I think what happens in our current cultural situation, when persons get into power, whether they're male or female, they fulfill a certain set of roles, which have evolved in a very aggressive and I would say male context. So it's really difficult to make any kind of measure of an abstract measure of how women would control or would be leaders in the context outside of the way in which things are structured. So it's not a really fair measure to look at Thatcher or to look at Merkel or whomever. I do not know, and I don't know that we ever will know what it would be like were women commonly heads of state. I'm suspicious because I think roles trump sexuality and biology. But again, I don't really know. I wonder what you think. 231-8187. Lisa, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Joe. I also was not going to call in. I listen frequently, but not necessarily a person who makes an attempt to add my thoughts to the ongoing discussion. But I wanted to just suggest a couple of books, and I have to admit that both of them were recommended to me by my husband. So they come from a masculine recommendation, but they had a profound effect on my ability to sort of think about how did we get to this place where we live in a society that is not just, you know, I don't really think about it as masculine dominated. I think about it as masculine perspective dominated. So
okay.
Women can have a masculine perspective too.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, as opposed to a feminine perspective, which is different. But the first book is a more modern, I think maybe about 15 years ago it was published, maybe a little longer. The author is Leonard Schlein, S-C-H-L-A-I-N. It's called The Goddess Versus the Alphabet.
Mm.
And Dr. Schlein is a neurosurgeon who focused on treatment of eye problems, so visual problems. So a brain surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks very much about the physiology of communication that we use our eyes to accomplish, which is reading, basically,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, written communication over time and filtered through various cultures starting, you know, thousands of years ago, has affected the way our brains develop. And he ties the physiology and the physical function of reading to events, historical events in various cultures.
Hmm.
That, and basically he talks about the act of reading, which started in a concrete way. So for instance, the Chinese form of written language, which I think is called kanji, is they're symbols that are concrete. So, you know, the symbol looks like a house or a river or a tree or a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
The language that we use, the written language we use, the Hebraic form, which is symbols that are abstract. So they represent sounds, but in and of themselves, they mean nothing. They have to be strung together to create a sound. So you use a different part of your brain to decipher a written icon that means something, then and a different side of your brain, you know, predominantly you use to decipher an abstract sound that must be strung together with others to create a word, which then has meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was a profoundly disturbing but also enlightening and the very end, thank goodness, comforting book that talks about this evolution of how we use language as human beings. And so I just highly recommend anyone who's interested in how we have come to this place, and it's just there in the title of the book, The Goddess Versus the Alphabet, from a reverence for the feminine, which had to do with reproduction and managing the resource of continuing to have human beings,
mm-hmm.
To this place where we've got lots of human beings, and the masculine perspective is the dominant perspective still.
Mm-hmm.
The Goddess Versus the Alphabet.
What
and
was the
second one is a book written by a Japanese man, and he wrote this in the 18th century. His name was Toshinobu Yasunaga, but the title of the book is Ando Shoeki, so A-N-D-O, S-H-O-E-K-I. And this gentleman, you know, almost 200 years ago, talks about, again, communication between men and women. And he talks about how it's so important that communication be speaking directly to one another. And as soon as we remove that element and make it a written language so we communicate with each other from a distance, we begin to create a separation between our ability to have an equal relationship between one another.
That is interesting.
Yes, and so if women have been historically involved in the bearing and raising of children, while the men have been out historically bringing in the resources to support that effort in the home, the men have also had the time to be doing the writing. And so we have this situation where, you know, the masculine perspective has had the time to do something other than, you know, that is other than just the hands-on application of raising and bearing children. And the hopeful part is that as women have more time to do other things, the feminine influence and perspective begins to seep into and become more visible in our world. I don't think it needs to be more dominant, but I do think it needs to be more visible. And part of the thing that reassures me about this is that in the Christian religion and other religions, there's a very masculine perspective. The Creator is referred to in a masculine way.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to have been raised in the Lutheran Church, and we now have a husband-wife pastor at our church, so they each are pastors, and they're beginning that use of language that doesn't always refer to God as him and a man.
Mm-hmm.
They're beginning that effort to use language that includes the feminine perspective of the Creator. So that's reassuring to me.
Well, that is very interesting. I wanted to say one thing. More and more, as anthropologists and archaeologists and so on look at human societies, we discover that the notion of hunting and warfare, while certainly present in societies, probably played less of a significance in the development of humankind than farming, and farming was often principally the work of women in many, many, many societies. I just an aside here.
Well, I agree, but if you're farming, you also don't have time to be writing down your thoughts.
Well, surviving takes up a lot of time in any event.
It does.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate your comments and your suggestions. They're very useful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having the show.
Sure. 231-8187. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. We're asking only for women callers today, and we're kind of leaving topics open. My deep and abiding concern at this point is what I see is the really dangerous situation that humans have gotten themselves into, and in what I see as a dominantly patriarchal approach to things, whether the leadership is male or female. Want to hear from you? Let's see who's next. Susanna, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, I've thought about this a lot. I'm actually a farmer, and I'm getting older, and I've been alone on my farm for most of my adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also dealt with men all the time, of course, and I have rentals, and I need help at times, and was not raised to fit in the role models.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take the position. I mean, there's a lot of subtle positioning, and I think that the whole alpha beta thing is rarely ever talked about.
Mm.
And when I look at animals constantly, of which we are one,
mm-hmm.
that the alpha beta thing is hugely important on structure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of signaling, and I think that white males just presume alpha dominance, myself, and I confuse them and I put them off because I ignore it and I don't assume that they are alpha dominant.
Huh, that's interesting. And so you don't fulfill the role that's expected of you by men, and then that creates some kind of dissonance or confusion in them?
And it's not the obvious role. It's also just just talking directly like this. And mm-hmm. Would you please, versus, you're doing hay for me, you do this and this and this. And when I'm running a hay crew, most of them are younger kids, and I'm kind of grandmother figure now, and that's fine. But not if I'm in an equal position, like on a governmental thing. For the men that can think out of the box, it's fine. But sometimes on real subtle levels, I find this going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been watching the conversation about opening doors for women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think opening a door for somebody is a nice gesture. But I open doors for men all the time.
I always thought that whoever's at the door first should open it for the next group of people.
Absolutely. It's a nice gesture.
Yeah.
And if I'm trying to get out of a car full of groceries, I would certainly hope that somebody would grab groceries with me.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about kindness, really.
Is that when men want to do something for a woman because it's a guy thing, you take away the woman's possibility to learn how to use her body, how to do it. I mean, even just slinging big sacks of grain around
mm-hmm.
teaches a woman how to use her body, and if a man did it. And I find that if I'm doing it, well, when I was younger, now at my age, because I'm pushing 70, if somebody wants to throw all the grain sacks around, great. But if I want to do it, all I want to do is say, I've got it. And the other day, I was trying to close a heavy gate, and I want to latch it the way I want to latch it. And the man goes to get it, and I said, I've got it. And he goes to get it, and I said, I've got it. And he still goes to get it, and I stood in front of it, and I said, listen. And it was somebody who wanted to rent a house from me, and I said, no, it won't work, because you'll be on my farm, and we have to work together on my water line, and all these things, very interesting. Just the water line,
mm-hmm.
having a man call me when there's been a disconnect to just keep me informed, because I've lived here 40 years, and
mm-hmm.
I want to know, because it's my water, too.
Sure.
And yet, the feeling I get from what they say is they don't have to report to mom about.
Wow. So essentially they're kind of replicating traditional roles and being very sexist, is what you're saying, I think.
It's very hardwired, and I think, I don't know at this point if younger men are better or younger men with kind of a mother-grandmother figure have less issues about it.
Yeah, I have no idea, but it's an interesting question. And to me, as I said about the door opening, whoever's there first, whoever knows how to do the water, whoever, whatever, should be doing it. And I don't think it should have to do with gender at all.
Yeah. And then on NPR, they were talking about the door opening thing, and the guys there feel put off, like their role usurped or something. And I kind of laughed when I heard it. Because let me tell you, if I open the door to a homeless man and smile at him, he's delighted.
Sure.
But the NPR guys?
Yeah.
Feel their role. I found that very interesting.
Well, that is very interesting. And I thank you for the call, and I wish you luck continuing.
Can I make one more quick comment?
Sure.
And this is about Hillary Clinton.
Uh-huh.
I find her in all those power plays, and I'm very concerned because her PR guy orchestrated the Honduras coup when she was Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
The military, it's now the murder capital of the world in Honduras.
Yes.
And now El Salvador's election, the same patterning is happening.
You're
and
right.
Right now, at this very moment.
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And I just worry that Hillary is following also the pattern of Bill Clinton, who is doing in Haiti, just like NAFTA and exporting, not paying minimum wage, but terrible wages in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Clinton has orchestrated a lot of this. And I think she buys into all the same stuff. And I think Obama does. And I love the idea of women leaders. Absolutely love it. But they can't go into that paradigm. If they continue that paradigm, I much would prefer a man who's out of the box of that paradigm.
Okay, that is an interesting perspective, and I certainly, I have, as you can probably guess, more concern for how people behave than what their gender is.
Yes, I know that with you, yes.
But thank you very much for the call, and I'm kind of very curious about your farming, because that's really cool.
Well, I'm looking for somebody to partner with me, so the iFarm website has my farm on it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You bet. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. The number is 231-8187, and we're talking with women today on issues that they find important, and I want to hear from you. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. This is Chris, and first of all, it sounds like an amazing lady and at her age being a farmer.
Yeah, it's cool.
Totally awesome. In reference to that, I've had similar situations with my mother-in-law. Now, I'm around 60, and I had an elderly mom who passed on recently in the last few years, and she always wanted me to do things for her. But my mother-in-law, who's close to the same age, is very independent, and she likes things done for her, but only if she asks specifically for them, and only specifically the way she wants them done. Otherwise, she'll get angry. So it's one of those things where it's an elder's thing in this case. I mean, I would be behaving similarly towards an elderly man regarding certain issues. But the two things, one regarding the heads of state. I mean, I don't, the major heads of state, the heads of power states, like Indira Gandhi.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
Just like with Obama.
We've run out of time. I'm really sorry. We'll do another one of these shows real soon. I enjoy it, and I think it's useful for all of us, and I think women need more strong voice on all media. So let's make this kind of a tradition on a regular basis. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. KBOO is ever interested in issues of importance to men and women. And we got some great programming coming up, and, of course, giving us money is always a good thing. We'll be right back.
And good morning. It's 9 a.m. and you are tuned to KBOO in Portland. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, journalist and writer Chris Hedges speaks on Captain Ahab and U.S. Empire. Stay tuned at 10. Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentaries. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a report from Japan on the third anniversary of the tsunami and nuclear meltdown in Fukushima, Japan. And we'll hear from Daniel Sheehan, who talks about his new autobiography, The People's Advocate, with the inside story of over a dozen historically significant American legal cases of the 20th century. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host Dime Roberts speaks with Katie Lillehome of the Well Arts Institute and writers Bonnie Littleton and Gary Gilbert about The Unexpected Guest, a new theater performance written by people living with multiple sclerosis. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Amy Bernstein, who has a show of paintings at Nationale. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a member, why not become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the March selection for the monthly Jefferson High School Multicultural Film Festival. This month, the film The Canary Effect will show on Tuesday, March 11th. The Canary Effect is a 2006 documentary that looks into the effects that the United States and its policies have on the indigenous population. That's The Canary Effect, Tuesday, March 11th at 6 p.m. at the North Killingsworth Library. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University. Merrillhurst University's 5 part-time MBA programs designed for working professionals who are seeking to enhance skills, revitalize career potential, and gain new knowledge that can be applied at work the next day. Enrolling now for spring term. Details at merrillhurst.edu. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com. And now, here's Alternative Radio.
Moby Dick, at the end of the novel, rams and sinks the Pequod. The waves swallow up Ahab as the planet begins to convulse with fury, as the senseless greed of limitless capitalist expansion implodes the global economy, as our civil liberties are eviscerated in the name of national security, shackling us to an interconnected security and surveillance state that stretches from Moscow to Istanbul to New York. How shall we endure and resist?
That's Chris Hedges, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Chris Hedges on Captain Ahab and U.S. Empire. The demonic Captain Ahab in Melville's epic novel, Moby Dick, represents a quest for power and domination that is a death wish. Hubris will doom Ahab and his Pequod crew. All perish except for Ishmael. Is there a larger lesson to be learned? Is the United States much different? The U.S., with its obsessive drive for control of oil and other resources, its relentless hunger for profits, its garrisoning the globe with military bases, its arrogant disregard for the environment, is on the same suicidal path as Ahab. Washington's policies, under both political parties, are always imbued with benevolence and noble intentions. It is innocent of imperialistic designs. Freedom and democracy are its goals. a well-disciplined media and intellectual class rarely challenge these embedded assumptions. We continue to ignore all warnings as to the destruction we are wreaking on our planet. To talk about these issues is Chris Hedges. He's an award-winning journalist who has covered wars in the Balkans, the Middle East, and Central America. He writes a weekly column for truthdig.org, and he's senior fellow at the Nation Institute. He's the author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, American Fascists, Empire of Illusion, and Death of the Liberal Class. He spoke at the University of Montana in Missoula. And now, Chris Hedges.
The most prescient portrait of the American character and our ultimate fate as a species is found in Herman Melville's Moby Dick. Melville makes our murderous obsessions, our hubris, violent impulses, moral weakness, and inevitable self-destruction visible in his chronicle of a whaling voyage. He is our foremost oracle. He is to us what William Shakespeare was to Elizabethan England, or Fyodor Dostoevsky to Tsarist Russia. Our country is given shape in the form of the ship, the Pequod, named after the Indian tribe exterminated in 1638 by the Puritans and their Native American allies. The ship's 30-man crew, there were 30 states in the Union when Melville wrote the novel, is a mixture of races and creeds. The object of the hunt is a massive white whale, Moby Dick,